Broadcasting to New York City, Los Angeles, Chicago, Sydney, London, and around the world, this is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm, livelink at thetrumpet.com. Coming up on this Monday edition, look at some interesting headlines as well as important historical dates that have some interesting aspects to them we'll look at. Also going to take a look at a really important booklet about the nature of God, how it relates to our society today and the breakdown of the family. That and more coming up on this Monday edition of Trumpet Radio Live.
This is Trumpet Radio Live.
Thanks for joining us here on Trumpet Radio Live on this Monday, 101.3 KPCG and online, kpcg.fm. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, you can do that at kpcgfm. If you'd like to email us, send those emails to comments@kpcg.fm. I was laughing yesterday. I'm Dwight Falk, by the way. Grant Turgeon here today as well. I was laughing yesterday. I was watching a little bit of football, and on Friday, Grant, you were telling me the Bills, your team there, was starting a new QB. You were excited. I saw he threw 5 interceptions.
In the first half.
Yeah, and I just shook my head. I thought, oh, poor Grant. He's not liking this today.
No, I feel bad for him, too, because everyone on Twitter is probably going to be saying that they should have never made the quarterback switch, and yet on every single interception, either the guy dropped the ball and hit it up 20 feet in the air for a defender to catch, or he got just absolutely drilled by a defensive lineman, or his own guy ran into him on one of his interceptions. It's like every single one, you could probably blame his own teammates for that.
I never like that when it's counted against the quarterback, but it's not his fault sometimes. But yeah, it's funny. I watched a little bit of football yesterday, and it's just amazing to me. I was kind of laughing how, you know, these are really, I guess, the top-notch athletes for the sport. And sometimes, though, they do things that are just so inept. You're like, how is that possible? I was watching one game, and the ball was thrown to the receiver. And he, not only did he not catch it, he, like, slapped it away from himself. Like he was, you know, 5 years old. I saw, this guy's getting paid, you know, several millions of dollars to just catch that thing. And yet he just slapped it with his hand. I don't know what he was thinking.
No, I exactly. I saw one kind of like that where he was running over the middle. All he had to do was sort of jump a little bit off the ground. The ball still hit him right in the chest, and he dropped it. It hit him right in the chest. And it's like, this is your entire job. There's no one even near you to hit you, and you just didn't catch it.
Yeah, it's, you know, no one's perfect, obviously. Nobody's perfect in their jobs, but yeah. Same thing with, like, say, a professional basketball player that can't make a majority of free throws. You know, I'm like, well, what else do you have going on outside of the game? You pretty much are here practicing this, right? Like, are you still going to college on the side? Like, why can't you get in the gym and work on the shooting a little bit?
It might be a little bit too much going to the club in their free time.
Maybe. I don't know. It's always interesting. But you do feel bad for some of those people. I mean, it is a fishbowl. Everyone's staring at them and criticizing every little thing they do. Kind of interesting related to sports. Today, the Georgia Dome was blown up on purpose after hosting Super Bowls and Olympics. One of the nation's largest dome stadiums imploded Monday. Nearly 5,000 pounds of explosives were on hand to blast the Georgia Dome in Atlanta to smithereens. They blew it up to build something new. So if you're interested in watching giant buildings implode, you can find that on the internet in many locations.
Yeah, and it's actually incredibly efficient how they do that. It collapses in on itself, and then the debris is not scattering on the nearby buildings. They're pretty scientific with the way they blow those buildings up. Yeah. And that used to be the Atlanta Falcons stadium, but now the new one they have, it's really classy. Their soccer team plays there too. I mean, you can understand why they moved.
I guess it's smart to do it. I don't know. It always seems like, well, couldn't you just fix it? But maybe it gets to the point where it's so decrepit, it's better just to blow it up or implode it, I guess.
Use it for something else, maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know. You could put plenty of concerts in there and not have to ever use the stadium for that.
Yeah, they blew up the one in Seattle years ago. Mm-hmm. That was the King Dome, right?
Right.
That one got blown up or imploded. And then I've actually seen it happen one time live in person. It was a building, an old building in Louisville, Kentucky. They were blowing up, and they had to do it anyway, and they were filming a movie there, and so they used it for the movie. Mm. So they got two things done at once, which is kind of cool.
That's efficient. That's actually maybe justifiable, so that the movie directors maybe could pay for something like that.
Yeah, it's, you know, hey, we're taking it down anyway, so, you know, use it for the use it for the film. So anyway, that happened today at the old Georgia Dome there. I remember one thing about the Georgia Dome. I do remember, you might remember, what was his name? Oh, Jerry Glanville. He was old coach for the Falcons years ago. I think that was his name. And he was a big fan of Elvis Presley. And I think he thought Elvis was still alive. And I saw a story where he said he always left tickets for Elvis on the stadium just in case. So I guess he can't go anymore if he wanted to.
Well, I guess they never really quite filled the stadium then. Always those two empty seats.
He always left a couple of seats for the king. The guy never showed up. Another headline today, probably the top one, I guess, just in the U.S. anyway, is that Charles Manson's dead. Died in California. And, of course, one of America's most notorious killers. And he was up in his early 80s there, died of, I guess, natural causes. The Drudge Report headline was, "Hell's Burning." And then there was other ones saying that he's in hell. And it made me think about some really good write-ups of thetrumpet.com about hell. What is hell? Look that up at thetrumpet.com. People think when very bad people die, they go to hell. But there's more to that than they realize.
Yeah, years ago we had an article about Timothy McVeigh who had that terrorist attack in Oklahoma City, and that was probably one of the most controversial articles ever on the website, because it did explain how even people as evil as that will have another chance. And people, obviously, when they're angry about an attack like that, they're hoping that there's the worst possible outcome for him.
Well, it's really interesting. And yeah, that article you mentioned is at the Trumpet, is Timothy McVeigh in Heaven or Hell? You can find that one there too. And it does talk about this idea of heaven and hell, and it talks about God's plan. And it's interesting. People are, you know, kind of stand as a judge and jury in some of that thinking, you know, where they'll see somebody that does something horrible and say, well, they're going to hell as they see it. But then at other times, people do things that are really bad, but the family members will say, well, no, they were pretty good. They just made a bad decision. Well, you need to find out the truth about heaven and hell, and you can find that at thetrumpet.com.
And like you've said before, every time there's a funeral, the pastor will never say, well, this person is now down in hell looking up at us. It's always, no matter who the person is, the person's always going up to heaven.
Deathbed repentance.
Yep.
I mean, that's what they talk about, but... Anyway, so that's just interesting because people do have a certain concept of heaven and hell, and usually it's taught, you know, to them from their youth. And a lot of things in life, it's easy to just sort of believe and go along with it, but there's some good write-ups at thetrumpet.com about the reality and the truth about heaven and hell, and you need to look that up. The truth of it's a lot better than what people think. It's a much better scenario for human beings and what the heaven and hell doctrine would have people believe.
Exactly, because there are tens of billions of people who have never even heard the name of the one true God. They've never learned anything about his truth. So how would it be fair that those people could end up in hell?
Right, and that's something that really people that maybe grow up in a certain religion, I've heard different interviews and so forth where people have questions like that. They say, well, okay, so if somebody doesn't confess Christ, they go to hell. That might be a thinking that's out there. They say, well, what about, like you said, all those people that never even had a chance to hear that? That doesn't seem fair, right? But that's why you have a clash of religions, right? Islam, they believe one thing. Christianity believes another thing. And they're very different beliefs. Each group thinks the other one's going to hell. How are you going to have peace between those two groups?
Yeah, that's just such a cause of division now, and yet everyone's wrong on it. Everyone except for a few thousand people on the earth in the one true church is wrong about this issue. And you hear it all the time, people talking about heaven and hell. Those are not things, at least not the way that we describe them. Hell is literally like the grave right underground in almost every case. It's mentioned in the Bible. And heaven, I mean, there is a universe out there, but to just think that there's a place with clouds where you can go and do nothing, that's not exactly what heaven is according to the biblical description.
Right, and we're going to talk some about God's plan for man later in the program, and a point that we'll bring out there, and might as well mention it here too, is that, you know, God does want us to prove things. That's the issue. You know, prove it. I don't know. It's easy to accept something, but we have to be able to go back and prove it. God says very specifically, prove it. And so it's good to look at those write-ups about heaven and hell, because it will prove the truth of the matter.
Exactly. And another thing that just shows that the true teaching on the issue is a lot more hopeful. Just consider the scenario of someone who went up to heaven, but then what if several of her family members are down in hell? So for all of the rest of time, she's going to have to be looking down there and seeing them suffering. And they never die. Their suffering never ends. They're just stuck down there forever. And she is always going to remember them and understand that they're down there living a very different life than she is.
Right. And I think there are people that sort of kind of logically start to think about some of those beliefs, and they say, well, it doesn't make sense. And then sometimes they'll just kind of give up on religion, or they'll, you know, go a different direction in life and not really stop and think, well, maybe just what I've believed about religion isn't right. Doesn't mean that God's word's wrong or God doesn't exist. Maybe they just have a misunderstanding of it. And that's something I don't think people think about quite enough. They think, well, I don't agree with this teaching, therefore I'm throwing religion out. Well, maybe you don't understand the truth of God.
And so they're kind of going the right direction, but then they go to an extreme. They're not supposed to be trusting in a man, which they have learned that by just thinking about it logically. But at the same time, they're not seeing that these men are not even teaching anything from the Bible. It's totally separate. There is a way to figure out what the truth is, and just people... they come up with these sayings, they come up with these ideas that maybe they sound the most pleasant until you start to think into them a little bit more. And then you realize that actually the true doctrine, the true belief on the matter is a lot more hope-filled.
Yeah, there is. And that's the good news when you look into it. It's always better news than I think people think. Here's an interesting story. A border agent killed and a partner injured by illegal immigrants using rocks. So people use all kinds of things. Illegal immigrants reportedly assaulted two U.S. Border Patrol agents with rocks, killing one and seriously injuring another Sunday near the southern border with Mexico. So apparently there's some violence down in that area. Not surprising.
Did they throw the rocks or did they stone them to death?
Well, they say the details are still a little bit murky, but the FBI, one of their spokesmen came out and said that they were not shot, the Border Patrol agent and the person with them, there at the area they were in, but the quote-unquote undocumented immigrants, they said, likely use rocks to bash the agents. Oh. So some sort of a close-range situation there, it looks like. Reports are still coming out. But the reason I think it's interesting is there's sort of this narrative out there that, you know, people just want to come and, you know, raise their families and do all this noble thing. A lot of people are getting killed, and there's a lot of violence and a lot of drugs down there.
And the argument for open borders, it truly is incomprehensible. People say that, well, there's bad people in America as well, so how can we just discriminate against these immigrants who are trying to come here illegally? Well, there's only so much you can do about the ones who are already here, but you can actively prevent more bad people from coming in. Why would people be against that? Isn't that really confusing? There's just obviously no logic or common sense there at all. You can do your best to incarcerate those who are dangerous within the borders, but why let in a whole new population of criminals? Many of them criminals. I mean, all of them are criminals just by the fact that they cross the border illegally, but a lot of them as well probably will end up committing crimes once they're here.
Absolutely. So, and it's a good point you bring out. I mean, anybody that's coming across illegally is doing something illegal. And then again, people, you know, want to maybe get into, say, sort of this moral relativism where, well, they're doing bad things, but for the right reasons. Well, you can't do that. If it's wrong, it's wrong. You can't, you know, lie, but it's for a good cause. Sorry, Santa Claus. You know, you can't do those types of things. If wrong is wrong, and you can't say, well, yeah, they're coming illegally, but they're doing it for good reasons, or they want good things to occur because of it. That's where it gets all weird with the argument.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we citizens don't get that kind of a benefit that we can break the law out of convenience. I mean, we don't get to run red lights because we're running late for work. The police officer who stops us is not going to care that we were running late for work. They're going to stop us and they're going to charge us accordingly every single time. And that it's, you can't just do whatever you want and then expect to have no penalties for it. You know, you can't be selling drugs on the corner just because you're late on paying your rent. I mean, there is never a justification for breaking the law, no matter what the circumstance is. And so we should all expect whether we're citizens or whether we're illegal immigrants trying to cross the border, to have some sort of a penalty if we get caught breaking the law. That's just common sense.
Yeah, and there's also kind of, I guess, there can be this idea that laws are in place to hurt individuals. In most cases, they're not. They're there to protect people. Like the example of running the red light. Well, you could say, well, it hurts me from going without stopping, but it protects people from getting in car accidents. Mm. This protects the border, protects the citizens of the United States from being overrun by other people. It protects the U.S. and it should be enforced.
That's a great way of looking at laws. Maybe sometimes we think they can inconvenience us, but what about the people around us? Pretty much every law we could ever think of prevents us from inconveniencing or hurting other people. That's the main thing. I mean, obviously, we're all going to try to do what's in our own best interest, but a lot of people aren't going to consider the interests and the needs of other people, and they're going to do huge injustices to other people if there's no law to stop it.
Yeah, so, but the reports that I've been kind of looking at say that under the current administration, the border agents feel like they're at least empowered to do their job. And if some of the laws, I guess, of the past administration had been enforced, many people would have quit because there's nothing you can do. If you can't enforce the law, what are you there for? Kind of just a target practice, I guess. So it's a dangerous job anyway, and unfortunately some people were killed by that. Illegal activity leads to more illegal activity. If you have people that are trying to do something illegal, they're going to be desperate, and things happen like this.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this before as well, but when I was in the Dallas airport a while ago, there was a funeral processional march through the airport, and it looked like a Border Patrol officer had been killed. And it did make me really sad and angry to see that, because the media doesn't really focus on the people who are being, they're being, done wrong, and they're being killed because of the way that we're trying to push for open borders. We're trying to tear down law, yet we're so hostile against those who uphold the law, whether it's at the border, whether it's law enforcement in general, it's our military, whatever it is. We just have all these forces in the country that are trying to say that these people are cruel, and they're imposing their malicious will against other people when they're making the ultimate sacrifice. And that's what we need to focus on.
Yeah. They're there to protect citizens of the U.S. So this was happening inside the airport. They were bringing somebody back
right through the middle of the airport. There was, like somber music. There were people marching. They were carrying some sort of a casket, and then there was an American flag, I think, draped over it as well. Something like that, from what I remember. And so it was pretty obvious what was going on.
Well, I've never heard of that happening. But I mean, obviously, yeah. it would, I suppose. I guess I've just never been in a situation like that. Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. So it was clear, like, wow, this is what's happening.
Yeah, they were because I looked closely, and it looked like they had Border Patrol decals on their uniforms, and so that's kind of how I knew specifically what was involved there. It did make me really angry, because like I said, people are trying to focus on how illegal immigrants are desperate. They're good people. They're just trying to get here and start a better life for themselves. And while that might be true, there are plenty of people who are abusing the system and trying to get here and harm others in the process.
Yeah, terrible situation. Also, they had an NFL game in Mexico yesterday. They're trying to the ratings are falling in the U.S., so they're trying to go other places. Not that it's because of that, but that's part of their global expansion idea. So they were playing down in Mexico there, and one of the players for a particular team, he sat for the U.S. national anthem but stood for the Mexican anthem. It just doesn't even make any sense. Like, why you would do that. I mean, if you're going to... what is he saying? He doesn't agree with the United States and our society, I guess, here, but he agrees with what's going on in Mexico? Does he even know? Like, does he support, say, some of the problems in Mexico? You don't think there are problems down there with, say, the police and with drugs and with, everything else? There's a lot of problems in Mexico, but yet they're standing for the Mexican anthem. It's just, I just don't think they know what they're doing.
And remember, they did that earlier this year in England as well. They stood for God Save the Queen, and they sat for the American national anthem.
Which is so funny, because the UK has taken a lot of flack over the years from, being imperialist and, colonizing other nations and things like that. And, of course, it actually did a lot of good to the world, but, there's people want to be negative about it. And so it just shows they don't even understand like the social justice history, because if you wanted to protest something and along the lines of the social justice movement, you'd protest that probably before anything else, you know, God Save the Queen.
Exactly. Great Britain, America, those are among the predominantly white have nations of the world, and you would think that they would protest all of them across the board and not just select their own nation, which, if they're being honest, has more benefits, more perks to living here than anywhere else. That's the reality of it, yet they protest here, and they don't protest other nations that they're just not as great as America is. That's the fact. I mean, especially Mexico. Britain is pretty close, but Mexico has, like you said, a lot of problems. And in a lot of ways, they're actively trying to undermine the U.S. by encouraging a lot of their people to cross the border illegally and send money back. It's actually huge for their economy, the billions of dollars that get sent back by illegal immigrants to their families in Mexico.
It's an ongoing situation. There was a guy over the weekend, too. At least I saw the story. I think it was, I want to say it was a college, but I can't remember if it was college or high school. I think it was college and some small school. Anyway, they're playing a basketball game, and they're having the national anthem. And the guy just kept shooting hoops, kept warming up.
Really?
Yeah, and the crowd was upset. So I think, I don't know what'll happen with it, but it'll be interesting to see, because a lot of people are getting more and more upset with some of these shenanigans.
Yeah, and I just have to wonder what these athletes think when the whole stadium is incensed at them. Do they just think, oh, well, all these people are racist? You know, is that really what they think of so much of the country? Do they really think that racism is so widespread now that everyone who is jeering them has to be a racist? I mean, it's just, there's no way of trying to understand what their thought process is. It's not that everyone hates you for your skin color. We hate you for being ignorant, if anyone hates you at all. I mean, I don't hate any of those people, but there's a lot of hatred being stirred up, and it's because of their ignorance of history, their ignorance of what's actually going on in the news. There's a lot of fake news that these people are falling for. They think that they're being treated unfairly in this country when that simply isn't true.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, say you provoke somebody, and then you get the response that you were expecting, which is they boo you, and they say, well, see, nobody likes me. Well, yeah, but you provoked the entire audience. So that's something that just keeps happening. Make sure you stop and check out the Trumpet Daily Radio Show today. Talks about a few topics, including this German coalition crisis, a big deal, especially if you pay attention to Bible prophecy and what it says about Europe and Germany. There's a write-up here that says German coalition talks trip over immigration stumbling block and a few other things. They can't get their four-party group together, I guess, which they're trying to do. So where do they go from here? That's the question.
Yeah, and obviously it's a really important part of the world over there in Europe, and we have to be paying attention to that, especially anything involving Germany. They're constantly working hard to build up their empire.
There's a strong leader that's been prophesied to come on the scene over there. And but if you know the prophecies there in Daniel, it talks about him coming in through flatteries, not coming in through a normal, like, say, election or political process. So it's very interesting to see how this is shaping up and to see what happens here. So make sure you listen for that Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Richard Palmer has a write-up on the Trumpet about it as well, and then he's interviewed on the show. He's got his nose in that pretty well. And German politics is a little different from the U.S., obviously, so it's kind of like, okay, what are they doing over there? But he gives some good insight into that. This particular write-up talks about some issues that they can't come together on: immigration, climate, Europe, the EU, and taxation. And so they have so many divides, and doesn't look like they can come together on these topics.
And from what I understand as well, I think they need this, you know, a four-party coalition, something like that, to even have the majority for Angela Merkel to rule effectively. And yet they have issues that they're so divided on. It would be like the Republicans and the Democrats in this country coming together and working together on anything. It's not happening on any issue, and yet they don't just have two parties involved. They have probably about four.
Yeah, and those are big issues if you look at them. You know, immigration's huge, and
yeah,
Angela Merkel's made her stance on that, and people don't like it, and the whole climate change, I don't know, that's probably neither here nor there. I mean, unless they're using it for some sort of political gain or, you know, some monetary kickback. But EU's a big deal. How's that going to work? And then how are nations taxed? That's a big deal. So all kinds of things they're dealing with. The Trumpet Daily Radio Show breaks it down pretty well for you today, and it's going to be something to really watch. Something that's been prophesied about for many, many years. Herbert Armstrong, Trumpet editor-in-chief Gerald Fleury, has written a lot about it, done a lot of programs about it, and so it's interesting just to see Germany struggling and fascinating to watch in light of Bible prophecy.
That is something that makes thetrumpet.com vastly different from any other news source. The fact that we cover Germany as much as we do and Iran as much as we do, Russia and China. If you look at most other sites, the top like 70 or 80 headlines are about the United States only. And thetrumpet.com has stories from all over the world. And they're based on the most prophetically significant hotspots.
Right. Yeah. Nowadays, with most media outlets, if you just said, I don't know, if you could like filter out content and say, I don't want to see anything about President Trump, there'd be like two stories left.
On the whole website.
On the whole website, like their entire archive. Because that's all it's about, the back and forth and the Twitter battles and all these things. Meanwhile, seriously prophetic events are happening, particularly there in Germany and here socially in the U.S. as well. But don't ignore what's going on in those regions.
Yeah, have you seen some of the just extremely shallow headlines they've been coming up with about President Trump? Just to attack him, just to get clicks, because probably their websites are failing. I mean, they criticized him for drinking water a couple of times during one of his addresses to the nation. And it's like that was the headline. President Trump sips water twice during national address, as if anyone really should care about something as shallow as that. And yet you have nations maneuvering to dominate the world and they don't even cover it.
Right. Well, that's true. I mean, if we have a real blindness in the media. There's no doubt. And not only is it somewhat deceptive, it's just totally missing the boat on the major, major stories. So that's why thetrumpet.com is so important. Thetrumpet.com today, top story is Iran's $400 million pound bribe. Or euro bribe. Euro pound?
I think it was different currencies.
Different. There's getting a lot of cash. We'll just put it that way.
It was a pound of cash. It was different currencies. I think it was $400 million, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the one... It
evened out to that.
Yeah, the one the U.S. did, and this one is a similar one that's happening now, where Britain is planning to present the Islamic Republic with a quote-unquote goodwill offering. I think that's... pounds. The Telegraph reported on November 15th that Britain is planning, it breaks down about $528.6 million U.S. dollars to Iran as a goodwill offering. This comes as perhaps a not so coincidental time. British Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson works to do everything he can, quote unquote, including bribery, to release British Iranian from Iranian prison, that lady Radcliffe. There are claims that Mrs. Radcliffe is being held as collateral and that the payment is effectively a ransom. So now Britain said, hey, the U.S. did it and it worked. Maybe we'll just pay the ransom and get our people back.
And I'm sure a lot of people are going to try to say that it's not a ransom, even when hostages are released at the exact same time the money is received. The way that things are now, I mean, we saw that with when America did it. Obviously, at first it was secretive, middle of the night, a plane flew over there. And whenever people finally found out, they continued to lie about all the details. It's probably going to be similar here because obviously most people in the media are supportive of the Iran deal. They don't want to make our partner in the deal seem like a hostile enemy. They want to make it seem like it was an actually successful deal. So they're going to have to paint it in a way that just makes it seem like we're doing a business transaction with them.
Yeah. And then it points out here, like you were mentioning, back in January 2016, the Obama administration secretly loaded up pallets of $400 million cash and airlifted it to Iran. And, of course, like you said, middle of the night. And then, oh, whoopsies. And, you know, they got caught and changed the story a couple of times.
Different accounts, different currency. It's like straight out of a spy movie what they did. And yet they pretend like it's no big deal. Like, oh, every administration before us has done something like it. No big deal at all.
Yeah, and they weren't good at hiding it. That's what bothered me. It was so out there in the open.
It's like they didn't really care about hiding it too much. Like they're trying to even just make it even more obvious how much the media is on their side.
Yeah, that was like they weren't good at covering it up, but somehow they were able to get away with it. But as it was pointed out at that time, a lot of people pointed out, and of course it's pointed out here again, all you're doing is encouraging more kidnappings. I mean, if you're willing to pay them big money to get your people back, why would they stop? Why would they stop kidnapping people? I mean, that's a lot of money. Nobody likes to see anybody, you know, in that situation. And obviously you would work to get your people back. But You know, there's other ways to do it. Like, say, if you don't give them back, we're going to attack your nation. Mm. I mean, you could do something like that. But, you know, they're wanting to spend the money instead. But it's a lucrative business for Iran. And everything's just going their way. It's amazing.
Wouldn't it be nice if world leaders actually enacted strategies based on having a little bit of empathy, like we've heard about President Trump being criticized for a lack of empathy in the news, as if that's a story. But what if these leaders thought, okay, I have family members, I have a wife, I have children. I do not want to be giving money to a hostile nation that could then actually, what if they kidnapped my family because they were now encouraged that they could get more money out of a deal like that, right? I mean, if you put your own family members or yourself in the situation that you are creating as a world leader, probably a lot of time you're going to be a lot less naive and a lot less ignorant in the strategies that you carry out.
And I don't know exactly how this particular lady got over there in terms of being in prison, but sometimes people just shouldn't, you know, they're going to places they shouldn't be. If you're an American, if you're a Westerner in some of those very anti-Western nations, you got a target on your back, mm-hmm. and especially now you do, because there's just so many. It's valuable for them to take a hostage because they're getting these payouts. There's a commercial on TV I saw recently where these people, it's the husband and wife or something, and they throw a dart and it hits the map, and that's where they're going to go. And it hits Paris, and then the camera pans out as Paris, Texas. And they're like, oh, okay, we'll go to Paris, Texas. So we're watching this commercial the other day, and my son said, what if it hit North Korea? And I said, great point. Yeah, you wouldn't want to play that game if you the dart hit North Korea or Iran or something.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we have some issues here maybe, but nothing compared to the nations like that. I actually saw, speaking of North Korea or China, America is on a list of only 7 nations in the entire world that allows these like late term abortions or partial birth abortions. So we act like we're so righteous and we care so much about social justice, yet at the same time, we're on a level of murdering our infants that only North Korea and China are at, basically.
Wow. Yeah, there's a lot of stories about North Korea right now because of that guy that escaped. Got shot, but he survived, and then he had a bunch of a really big parasite in his stomach, and they think it's because they're the way they're growing their food over there, and they're putting human feces on it and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, just really ignorant, if nothing else, farming methods, maybe intentional, I don't know, but ignorant, if nothing else. But like you say, it's easy to look at that and say, well, how could you? You know, how could you do that, those types of things? But then you look at some of the things happening here in these nations that do have a history with God and do know some laws, and you think, well, how can we do this? And we know better. And
right.
Look at some of the things we're doing.
Yeah, it does show that we have a lot of hypocrisy in this nation. And at the same time, there are some things here that are legitimately great to enjoy that people just aren't thankful enough for. So we don't. On the one hand, we don't necessarily see how evil we are. And on the other hand, the good things that we do have, we're not thankful enough for.
Yeah, we take for granted a lot of blessings, for sure. You're listening to Trevor Radio Live here on 101.3 KPCG. Thanks for joining us on this Monday. You can send any comments you have to comments@kpcg.fm. And follow us on Twitter if you'd like to, Twitter @KPCGFM. Today is the 20th of November. Interesting thing that happened on this day in history. 1977, Egyptian President Anwar Sadat became the first Arab leader to address Israel's parliament. Really a huge, huge thing because, of course, they are bitter enemies. So for him to do that was a great extension of peace, and it worked for a time until he was assassinated. And we have a really good write-up about that. Ambassador for World Peace, it's on the Trumpet.com, why Herbert W. Armstrong met with hundreds of world leaders, including President Sadat.
Yeah, a while ago I actually found the transcript for that speech. It's easily available online, and I think it's one of the top 5 or 10 speeches of all time, because if you consider just the entire scope of the crisis over there, where they had 4 wars in 30 years against Israel, the Arab world just completely trying to annihilate the Jewish state that had just been put into existence. And here we have Anwar Sadat thinking about, like I said, thinking about, well, what if it were his family? It's his Egyptian brothers and sisters who are dying in all these wars. And so he did something totally unprecedented to try to stop that. He tried to make peace with what was considered their most mortal enemy in the entire world, And, of course, the Arab world turned on him, and he was eventually killed for it.
And they did have a pretty good peace with Israel there, even with Hosni Mubarak afterwards. Mm-hmm. Of course, that's the U.S. helped to knock that down, but a while back. But, it is very interesting because you talk about peace in the Middle East. That's always a really, you know, the big prize that everybody wants. Everybody wants to be part of the peace in the Middle East. But what did it take for it to actually start to happen? It took somebody from the Arab side to come and say, yes, we will make peace. Israel was ready. I think they're still ready. Mm-hmm. But no one else besides Mr. Sadat would venture to come over. You can't have peace if only one side wants it.
Yeah, and I also saw the Israeli leader at the time, Menachem Begin, was described as like the most hard line of any Israeli leader, and yet he was extremely willing to come to the table and talk about how they could make peace. This is the most hardline conservative leader in Israel, and even he was willing to talk with the Arabs. So if he was willing, no matter who is in charge of Israel will probably be willing to talk or to reconcile in some way. It does take two to tango, as they say, though. It does take someone on the other side to come to the table. You saw that with Anwar Sadat. They were trying to build that World Peace Center at the base of Mount Sinai, where they would have a church, a mosque, and a synagogue all in the same place. What a symbol of unity that would have been. And yet they killed Sadat before he had a chance to really get into that too much.
Yeah, we were right there on the cusp of some great things there in 1977 time period. And then what happened very shortly after that, you get the radical regime in Iran come to power. And the Middle East has been chaotic since. I mean, it was chaotic before even, but it's been really radical since that time. So really an interesting period of history there. Watch Jerusalem this week, which you can find online at kpcg.fm and thetrumpet.com, and listen to here on the station. Talks about that history a little bit as well. So there's some good insight there. And Herbert Armstrong was very much involved with Mr. Sadat and with Israel, and you know, had a lot to do with probably that peace movement behind the scenes, and it's talked about in this great write-up, Ambassador for World Peace, there at the trumpet.com. Easy to forget about that history, but very important history to look into and remember, and it does show you that there can be peace. You know, there's a way to peace, but it does take change, and it does take both sides coming together, as you said.
Yeah, I would highly urge all of our listeners to find that transcript as well. We have some great content, but if you read the whole speech, even of Anwar Sadat at the Knesset, it's eloquent, it's heartfelt. I mean, every sentence is like poetry almost, and yet he means it. He's totally serious about making an earth-shaking move toward peace, and really it was a glimpse of the world tomorrow when all nations, regardless of their backgrounds and their ideologies that they once had, will have peace.
Yeah, a lot of people, I think, have the notion that most people want peace, but it's just hard to come to. But I think with Sadat making that effort, and it was successful, and then being assassinated, it shows there's a lot of people that don't want peace.
That has to change.
A lot of people want to rule. They want to dominate. They want to enslave, but they don't really want peace. And, you know, you have somebody that really steps out and tries to make peace, and they kill him for it.
I mean, how else do you fix that without totally changing human nature, which we see it in the news all the time? Human nature is only getting worse as time goes on. The ability that we have for depravity is only increasing. We have to have a fundamental change, and it has to come from, as world leaders have always said, a strong hand from someplace.
Yeah. One other event that's interesting on this day, 1983, there was an estimated 100 million people that watched the controversial ABC TV movie The Day After. The movie depicted the outbreak of nuclear war. I remember that. It scared me as a kid. I don't know that I watched the original airing of it. Maybe I did, but I certainly remember seeing it at some point, at least part of it. And if I wasn't afraid of nuclear war before, I certainly was after.
Yeah, I'm sure that it probably had a lot of really realistic scenes in there, probably extremely disturbing. If you think about just the number of things that would be affected, I mean, really, it's everything. Your infrastructure, obviously your physical health, probably a lot of people that you know dying, places being made completely uninhabitable. And we have seen glimpses of that even just from the nuclear accident at Chernobyl, for example, or obviously after we dropped the atomic bomb on Japan and to end World War II, at least with them. you see what happens when you unleash some of these extremely powerful weapons.
They should have showed the they should have showed the people that before they made that deal with Iran.
Yeah,
because that's a reality. They would say, "Well, we're delaying it," but they're actually just speeding it up.
They're not changing the objective of the nation. You have to totally, you have to get rid of a regime that has that goal in mind. You can't just coexist on Earth with people who are unswayed by that. Maybe they'll slightly change the time frame, if that's even accurate in the deal. You have to totally replace the regime with people who are looking for peace, like we talked about.
Absolutely. You can compare and contrast President Sadat with the Iranian leadership today. One wanted peace. You saw what he did, the way he went about it. One, Iran clearly doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
They're belligerent. Even during the quote-unquote deal-making process, they were belligerent the whole time. I think it's going good, guys. It's being belligerent across the table there.
What if we just talked about with them, okay, we'll only come to the negotiating table. We'll only give you your money if you completely remove all thought of wiping Israel off the map. It would have stopped right there. We would have never had a deal. And at least we would be able to firmly acknowledge that they are our enemy. They are our mortal foe on this earth. That's something worth knowing. You have to understand as a nation who your enemies are. And we have lost sight of that largely because of that deal. A lot of people now think that Iran is our friend.
They should have had the supreme leader there in Iran come over to the Knesset and make a speech offering peace.
Could you imagine?
No.
he would probably go on a rant about how he wanted to kill everyone in the room.
Yeah. Yeah, check him on the way in. Make sure he's not carrying something. Here's an interesting one that was sent in from a listener. Interesting story. It ties into the booklet we want to talk about today. And it says this. This is from Fox News. Opinion. Our culture is experiencing a hostile takeover. We must stop rejecting God if we ever want it to end. And they talk about the recent Texas church shooting. The terrorist driving a truck through a crowd in New York City in the Las Vegas massacre. It says it may seem shocking, but really it's not. They say our culture is undergoing a hostile takeover. American society used to be governed by Judeo-Christian do unto other morals, but we have drifted, been pushed really, into a hedonistic YOLO, you only live once, cultural morass. That's new to me. I didn't know YOLO. Had you heard that before?
I sure have, but I'm a lot younger. So
not that much younger.
Sadly, I've been exposed to such things a little bit more.
YOLO, you only live once, which isn't true, actually.
Right, actually, yeah.
Yeah. They say the upshot of this is a distinct lack of respect for human life in general, as well as a pervasive, insidious obsession with self. This is the, quote, me generation, the selfie culture, the entitlement mentality, and what is entitlement except the narcissistic assumption of deserving and demanding what is not earned. And pretty scathing. And so in their opinion, we need to get back to God, of course, and that's true, although they have probably a different thinking on that than what the Bible actually says about getting back to God. But it is true. It is a very selfish, self-centered society. And you can't be selfish and self-centered and have a really solid family. And we see the destruction of the family in our culture today, and a lot of it's because everything is so self-centered.
Right, and the more we become indulgent in all kinds of sins, of course, we become tolerant of, you know, whatever it is, different family structures that give a disadvantage to children, different ideologies that seek to wipe us out. I mean, he did mention those mass killings, and you have to think that a big reason for those things would have to be a breakdown in family, and of course getting away from those, like he said, those Judeo-Christian values, accepting radical Islam among us.
Yeah, it's very easy as a young person to just be very self-focused, of course, and to think about yourself and what's going on in your life. And what really snaps young people out of that is having a family structure, having somebody to say, hey, you know, it's not all about you, my friend. And you have to have somebody telling you that and work on those things. But we talked about last week the conspiracy against fatherhood, how that's being destroyed. And, of course, it's a destruction of the family. And so today we want to take a look at why that's such a big deal and take a look at that throughout this week. And it's because God is a family. That's what's ultimately being destroyed. And so there's a great booklet by that title, God is a Family, at thetrumpet.com. And so as we go through some of this and hit some of the high spots, hopefully it'll show why the destruction of the family is such a big deal, because it's destroying so much more than just a group of physical people living in the same house. It's destroying really man's potential.
Exactly. And this booklet does clearly point out the parallels between the physical family and the spiritual family. And it also shows how both are being systematically destroyed. I mean, there's no other way to describe the Trinity doctrine, for example. That limits God to himself, Christ, and the Holy Spirit. And there's nothing else. There's no possibility for man to be born as his sons.
Yeah. Last week we talked some about evolution and how that destroys the idea of there being a creator. But a lot of people wouldn't think much about the Trinity doctrine in that same way. But the Trinity doctrine is also extremely dangerous. Now, I know it's a very popular doctrine for a lot of people. But again, something to prove, to look into. And the thing that makes the Trinity doctrine so destructive is that it closes off the God family. It gets rid of it to where there's sort of this closed-in Godhead. And, I don't know what happens to people. They don't know. I mean, the common thought is what? You go to some sort of heaven, or if you're a Muslim, you go to paradise, or if you were bad, you go to hell with Charlie Manson, you know, or whatever people think happens. And so it's a lot of confusion whether people don't believe in God at all, or they think God is some closed off Trinity. Satan, the devil, doesn't really care. He just doesn't want you to understand the truth that God is an actual family.
Yeah, there are a ton of ideas that undermine the truth that God is a family. Even like you say in Christianity, where we cap the Godhead at three separate and distinct beings. They describe the Holy Spirit as basically another being. And yet at the same time, they say that we can go to heaven and we can be spirit beings of some sort, but not angels and not gods. So what exactly does that make us? There's no clarity there. There's no vision there. It's way less inspiring to just be up there and having no purpose for the rest of time.
The Bible has a lot to say on the subject of the Trinity, of course, and so we have to look at that if we're going to talk about God being a family, because they're conflicting thoughts. It says there's no doctrine more mysterious than the belief that God is a Trinity. Most people believe it, been taught it growing up, or just kind of heard it, but no one can prove it. And that's a statement where if somebody believes it, they'd say, oh, yeah, well, okay, take a look. It says, doesn't it seem strange that most common belief among churchgoers today is not even mentioned in the Bible once? Look it up for yourself. And then it mentions 1 Thessalonians 5:21, where God commands us to prove all things. So that's a challenge to somebody if they say, well, no, I think that's true. I think the Trinity's right. Got to prove it.
Exactly. And it does say here that you won't find the word Trinity in your Bible. You will find a passage that is blatantly mistranslated so that people who believed in the Trinity could force that doctrine into the Bible. But it's obvious, and you can also prove that section was added, and it totally changes the meaning of the passage, and it's completely deceptive.
Yeah, that's probably the go-to scripture that people look at for that. But again, like you say, you've got to see what's the actual scripture and what was added. But it's a really good point about just proving things, because there's so much changing in society and no one's proved it, that it's right. You know, like the idea that fathers aren't essential or families can be however you want. Well, who's proved that? You know, you hear it. People say it's fine, but you don't see any proof on it, not any real proof. So it's just a good thing for life in general to stop and say, okay, I've heard this, I've seen this, this has been said to me. But can I actually prove this from God's word? Is this right or wrong?
Right. And like you say, the idea that fathers are not essential hasn't been proven, even by the most staunch advocates of flipping the family on its head. They always have to at least briefly acknowledge that the stats show how children are benefited by having a father and a mother in the home. They have to acknowledge that before going on to say, but it's also possible for children to be successful growing up in these different home arrangements. Maybe it is, but what are the stats? What are the fruits of that idea that you have? And so maybe if people can't strive against that disadvantage that they have in the home, even from an early age, maybe they can be successful, but it's in spite of the wrong family structure, and the idea that these people have is just completely against the facts.
Yeah. And I guess the thing that's the hardest about proving something is you have to be open-minded. Like, you have to say, okay, well, in spite of what I, my preconceived idea, is this right or is it wrong? Because like you say, with a lot of reports or things that would come out, there's already the pre-made narrative, and they're just trying to jam some stuff in there to make it work, like with the evolutionary theory and things like that. And very few are willing to really look at the truth of it, and if they're wrong, admit it, like, hey, I didn't know, I was mistaken on that. And that's the hard thing about proving things, is being honest.
Absolutely. And even just in that area of the family, the biggest issue is just fear and intimidation. They try to make you bow to what they're trying to push, that common conception now that any type of family structure works. Well, if that is true, then the facts should prove it out. And if it's not, well, stop teaching it. But the thing is, they don't want to be seen as bigots. They don't want to say, well, you know, the family living down the street from me that happens to have two mommies is an unsuccessful family structure. We don't have anything against different people here, but at the same time, you can still acknowledge that certain people are going to be at a disadvantage because they're not doing it according to the way God says.
Yeah, that's the key, is getting back to what the scripture teaches about things. And in relation to the Trinity doctrine, Herbert W. Armstrong, he was the founder of the Worldwide Church of God, as many people know. He wrote Mystery of the Ages, which is a really great book. It's at the Trumpet. You can get that. And he talks about all of this in depth, but one quote from that in relation to the Trinity and God being a family, he says, "The Trinity doctrine limits God to a supposed three persons. It destroys the very gospel of Jesus Christ, which is a gospel that's about family. And the Trinity doctrine destroys the very family of God." So you can see the connection here, whether it's a false religious concept that destroys the family of God, or it's evolution that denies God and destroys the family of God, or if it's, you know, we're going to do whatever we want and we're going to change the physical family in any which way. It all points back to one goal, which is destroying the truth that God is a family. And it gets hit from so many different angles. But that's what it's trying to destroy and undermine, that biblical truth that God's a family and man can be born into that family.
Yeah, and the paradox is that those who believe in the Trinity, usually they actually do support, for the most part, the idea of the traditional family, while those who believe evolution think that any family structure goes. You might be led to believe that those two different camps are on different sides and they're opposed to each other, yet those are just two different strategies that Satan has of distracting people away from God's plan. So really, all these people are on the same side. All of them are undermining either the physical or the spiritual family.
Yeah, it's a great point, because if somebody believes in, say, this closed off God that man can't be part of, and they're not sure what happens to man when he dies, then what difference does it make what kind of family you have? Really, why would it make any difference? And I think that's what some people say. They don't believe in any religion or any God. So they say, well, what difference does it make? But even if somebody believes in the Trinity, you'd have to say the same thing. Well, what difference does it make? What is the family teaching us? Why do we have to do it this way? And is it just because there's this God that just arbitrarily said, just do that because, you know? No, it's because it's to teach us something, but it's to teach us that God is a family. Human family is structured to teach us about God's family. And so it's amazing how that's attacked from so many different directions.
Right, yeah. Physical family has to be a direct parallel of the spiritual God family, or else why not do it however you want? Even if the stats on a physical level might show that traditional family works the best, if we're in charge, if we are the ultimate authority in our own lives, then we have the total freedom to raise our families, build our family structure any way we choose. Regardless of what the facts say, we still would have that authority because we would be basically God. But if God exists and he's telling us how to make the family and he's showing us the parallel to the spiritual family, then no matter what we would want to do with our families, we don't have that right because we're not in charge.
And that's where the people that would be very much against some of the new social changes, where their argument does kind of hit the wall and run out of steam, because you know, somebody would say, well, why can't we change it? And they'd say, well, because the Bible says. And they'd say, well, you know, so what? What does that have to do with anything? I don't believe in that. And then they're like, well, okay. Yeah, I mean, there's two groups that won't agree with each other. But when you start looking at why the Bible says that and why it teaches that and the importance of it, now you've got something to talk about. Mm-hmm. If it's just an arbitrary rule, well, people don't like those. But if there's a reason for it, if it's a pattern, if it's leading us somewhere, now there's a reason to talk about why families should be structured a certain way.
Yeah, it's easy to understand how the radical left has been so effective in undermining family and undermining the core institutions of society because, you know, it doesn't undermining these things just requires your own feelings on the issue to change a little bit. It doesn't mean you have to go prove from the origins of these institutions that they're the right way to go. It's just whatever you feel at the time, you can make the change. You're in control. You don't have to go prove that God exists and then prove what he says and then obey, which is the thing that people hate to do the most of all, it seems. It's just the easy way of going about life and choosing for yourself. Regardless of what the outcome is, at least you get to choose for yourself. You get to do whatever you want. You get to raise your family however you want. You get to live whatever lifestyle you choose, no matter how immoral it might be, because you're in charge. So just take it easy and enjoy it. That's kind of what the entire radical left push is. And so obviously that's going to be the easier choice to make. You don't have to put in the work of proving it and then believing it.
Yeah, and if a person on the other side of that argument doesn't actually understand what the biblical teaching is, the argument of just, well, we're supposed to not do that falls a little bit flat. Yeah. But this booklet, God as a Family, gets into a lot more detail, and we're going to talk more about it this week. And we're going to look at some of the proofs of God being a family and how he's working with mankind today. So we'll go through that more throughout the rest of this week, but we are out of time for today. But you can get the booklet if you want, and go ahead and read that. God's a Family. It's at the trumpet.com. That's all we got for today. Time wise we could have gone on and on, but we ran out of time. Make sure this is for the Key of David program, Trumpet Daily Radio Show, also coming up. Have a great rest of your Monday. Thanks for joining us. Myself, Dwight Falk, Grant Turgeon. We'll talk to you again tomorrow.
You're listening to Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG.